Hola.
Quiero montarme en tu velero.
Sí.
Ponerte yo el sombrero y hacernos eso. Ay, ay, ay.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 124. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and Papa John is still on baby duty, so we're talking backup today for Kubernetes using Velero. So I thought, you know what? I got some good old friends from the old country of Ireland that are going to come and join us this week. Joining us as co-hosts this week are Miles Gray and Cormac Hogan. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Pete. Good to be back.
Was that wrong of me to play Irish music?
No, you're good.
It depends who you ask.
I don't know. I feel like it's presumptuous to assume that Irish music is what Irish people listen to. I guess that's like me listening to Elvis. I don't know like what you would associate with
you
American music.
You don't listen
music.
To Elvis?
I don't actually.
Way to appropriate stereotypes.
Exactly. Gentlemen, long time. Miles, I see you all the time. You're on the vSAN team. But Cormac, it seems like forever you were focusing on core storage. But then every time I talk to you nowadays, it's definitely something more cloudy. What's up with your current focus?
What do you mean talk to me nowadays, Pete? You never call. You never write. You know, suddenly you have a need for somebody to come on a podcast and help you co-host. And
see,
you know, you're all over me.
You know I love you.
No, actually, I'm spending a lot of time helping Miles out. I'm just trying to give him a hand with stuff. There's an awful lot of stuff happening in the cloud native space, even cloud native storage space. I'm pretty sure that'll be the topic of a future podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just trying to learn as I go along and just give a helping hand as well.
That's a beautiful thing. Yeah. VMworld Barcelona last year was the big announcement, right? It was so subtle too. It was during one of the keynotes, and Pat Gelsinger was like, "Oh, and yeah, and we acquired Heptio, and moving along." They didn't really spend a lot of time on that, but I was like, you know, you start researching, it's like, hold on, Heptio is this company that's comprises, you know, it was made of two of the three founders of Kubernetes that are making this huge open source project for Kubernetes. That's a big deal, and so I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, we're acquiring this huge company, spending crazy money on it. I think it speaks to VMware's dedication to open source, but also to Kubernetes. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think what I've noticed from working with these folks internally over the last, I don't know, maybe 9 months now or so, is that they're still very much focused on open source stuff, which is great because it means that they are driving forward what the community is doing. They're making sure that we're, as a company, we're in line with what they're doing upstream and what they're doing with the open source community. So if anything, it really helps us to align ourselves with what the community wants to do,
yeah,
which is great because it means that, you know, we truly understand the direction things are going in and we can lend a helping hand with that as well.
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, before we even go further, why don't we bring on our special guest of honor today, one of the main engineers at Velero, and that is Carlicio Campos. Carlicio, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I feel honored.
Oh, we're happy to have you. Yeah. We've been trying to get you on for a while. I'm finally glad that we got this. I always knew I was going to have Miles by my side and Cormac because these guys, you know, when it comes to containers, I lean heavily on these guys. You know, we focus on vSAN and we do some things with containers, even in our lab. And Miles is constantly showing me fancy, shiny tools. And he's been talking about Velero for quite a while now. So glad to have you joining us, Miles.
Well, good. And Cormac's been talking about Velero for a while as well. I think he's got a couple of blogs on it, even on how it works, how to set it up, how to get it running in VMware environment too.
I was gonna say, I think I'm pretty sure Cormac knows more about Velero than I do. No, he does. He does have at least two very good blog posts. I highly recommend people reading, knowing how Velero works.
Yeah, that's Cormac in general. Anything Cormac studies, he's going to become the expert on it. That's just that's who Cormac is. So, but that's the last nice thing I'm going to say about Cormac. All right, moving forward. Yeah, I want permission to ask the silly questions because I have the least exposure to this, and I'll certainly lean on you guys for some more advanced ones. But I have a very simple question for you, and that is, I always heard of Kubernetes as stateless applications, and so we're talking about a company that focuses on backing up Kubernetes. I didn't realize Kubernetes really needed a backup. Am I oversimplifying this?
Yeah. No, it's a very fair question. It's a question that everybody asks when they hear about why we backup for Kubernetes. Why? So one thing is, you change state of your Kubernetes clusters, you might want that state. And another thing is that it is not true quite that Kubernetes is only for stateless applications or workloads. There are a lot of people using stateful apps, and what I hear, be you are going to embark on a Kubernetes journey, you start out with only your stateless workloads and set that up, and then bring on your stateful stuff, because it is complex. But there is a way to do it. It's just not, you can't just wing it, but there is a way to do it. There is a path for it. And that's very much what Valero does as well. We will help you take snapshots of your stateful stuff. So we have three native plugins, AWS, Google Cloud, and Azure. And we have external plugins for other cloud providers.
Okay.
So you mentioned that there's three current plugins there. I know you guys are working on some other engines in the background, other plugins that we might get into in a little bit around CSI, new container storage interface. But I guess I want to add a little bit of color as to why people would run stateful applications in Kates and not just stateless. And like Carlicia said, whenever people start their Kubernetes journey, they usually throw their stateless applications into Kubernetes because it's really easy to migrate them there, because you don't need to worry about, you know, where does the data live? How does it move around? How do I back it up? All that kind of stuff. So the stateful stuff is kind of like a no-brainer. It's really easy to get in there. However, once they put their stateless applications into Kubernetes, they see how easy that management tooling is and the management workflow, and how you can constantly iterate and automate the entire lifecycle of an application, that they get to thinking from, well, wouldn't it be nice if I could move my stateful applications in there and manage them the exact same way? So it's kind of like an evolution thing where they'll go and put their stateless stuff into Kates first, see how easy it is to manage that. And then what they'll do is they'll start pulling in their stateful applications, at which point all these questions start coming up. You know, how do I back it up? How do I make sure the data is available? All that good stuff. And that's where Valero comes in.
Yeah, one of the questions I had about that, Miles and Carlicia, is, you know, it seems like one of the things I hear a lot about Kubernetes is that the versions are changing, you know, quick updates, quick changes. And when that happens, though, when you have backup software, does that become confusing to, oh, this only works for this version, this one doesn't work for this version? Does it get real with that aggressive update schedule? Does that complicate things like, you know, supporting it for backup?
Well, with Valero, we haven't run into any major complexity with the changes in versions of Kubernetes. We try to be backwards compatible. When we changed from version 9 to version 10, someone in my team wrote a script to migrate the backups from one version to another. Version incompatibility, we will handle and try to be backwards compatible with Kubernetes. But with that said, too, as we keep developing, and for example, for our version 2.0, it will not be compatible with our version 1.0, but the same thing, just have it help you migrate. Kubernetes changes versions. Not every version of Valero is going to be compatible with Kubernetes, but it doesn't happen very often.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
The nice thing about the Kates stuff and the way it's managed from a community perspective too, and Carlicia can probably talk to this a little bit more, is that once they decide upon an API specification, it's not like it constantly gets changed and has breaking changes all the time. So they go through very specific life cycle with the API. So it'll start off with an alpha. They'll do a couple of releases as alpha. They'll change the spec. They'll move to beta. Once they are confident they've nailed down how the API works, they'll release it as GA. And at that point, once it's GA, it's kind of set in stone. So even though the versions of Kates keep iterating on, as long as you're using a GA version of an API, you're pretty confident that it's going to stay there at that point in time and is not going to introduce breaking changes in new versions.
Yeah, that's a really perfect way to put it. And we do the same with Valero. With every major release, we will release an alpha and a beta and then finally a GA.
Very nice.
So Pete, going back to that question about what do we back up, or do we back up stateless and stateful or whatever, I think the other misnomer is that a lot of people think cloud native is purely, you know, eBay's and Facebook's and that kind of scale.
Yeah.
And of course, when you're talking about that scale, doing backup or versioning backups makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So there'll have to be some other, you know, a DR or data redundancy type approach. But for all the rest of us mere mortals, you know, versioning backups of applications that are running on top of Kubernetes makes absolute sense. And that's where I think there's a market there, certainly for Valero, that, well, they're already tapped into.
I like it.
Yeah. And besides you wanting to have a backup, you might need to do data migration. You might want to clone your environment into another environment for testing, or move your environment from development to testing, for example. And Valero can be used to do that as well.
Yeah, I saw it almost like SRM a little bit. It's got like disaster recovery, data migration, and data protection all in this one utility, which made me wonder, is Valero using its own engine for doing like replication and doing, you know, is it leaning on things like vSphere replication, or is that where the plugins come in, where other people or other vendors can provide their ability to do snapshots and replication, or is that something that's actually built into Valero?
To be more accurate, we are not doing replication in the accurate sense of the replication word. That is actually on a roadmap for the future. So what we do is we use our own controllers to interact with the service provider. In the case of volumes, we will call their API. So each of our plugins will call their APIs and say, okay, this is what I need done. You know, however it happens behind that API is how it will happen. So does that answer your question?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. So you're setting up the framework for these other storage vendors or whoever, you know, to actually be able to use this where they can still use their snapshot technology, for example.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have this level of abstraction, and we're saying once you configure what your service provider is, the way you're going to do backups of Valero, no matter who you're running it against. And so that's for volumes, and for Kubernetes objects, we can back up the entire SCD, but we don't back up the database itself. We use the Kubernetes API. We use the API server, and then we back up all the objects, and that allows us to back up selectively. Maybe you just want to back up one namespace and also restore selectively. Maybe we recommend people do backup of the entire SCD cluster. And then when they restore, they can choose, I just want this namespace, or they can use labels to select separate things.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's like how people would do backups with, you know, traditional VM backup solutions where they apply tags to VMs, for example, Pete.
Yep.
And they'll say, you know, all these VMs belong to this tag, which is a particular application. So my web app one or something, it's got a SQL database, a mid layer, and then it's got its web front end. You group those together and then you create a backup job that just backs up the tag. This is basically the same thing, except the Kubernetes paradigm is labels. So again, you would just have a label for, you know, my app one that defines all of the different objects that are part of that my app one, and you create a backup job that just backs up that application.
And actually, in my testing, what I was doing is I was deploying a Cassandra database and just putting it into its own namespace. And using Valero, I could just point it at the namespace and it would just back up everything within that namespace. So really cool, because you could just blow away that complete namespace then and just restore the whole thing back. Namespace, all the pods, all the persistent volumes and so on, everything to do with the Cassandra deployment within that namespace was all restored. So pretty neat.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and you can move your workload from one namespace to another by just renaming that namespace in the same cluster. You can fork that namespace into the same cluster with a different name for the namespace. And you can, of course, copy from one cluster to another and rename it if you want to.
Yeah, so it's kind of like what people would do with traditional backup vendors. Like you would see people spinning up test environments from backups. you can do basically the same thing there. You spin up a test namespace and you run your tests against the namespace, and you've got an exact copy of your production data.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So let's go with that comparison to traditional backups and some of their the way they do things. Is this like most backup vendors are like, we're agentless. It's on your server and you can back up everything. You don't have to do anything to the individual guest. I'm assuming there's a similar framework for Valero.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of different in that, and Cormac and I have had plenty of discussions on this recently about people, they tend to get confused. If they're coming from a VM-centric background, they'll say, how do I back up my Cates cluster? And the answer is you don't really want to back up your Cates cluster itself. Like, you shouldn't care about the VMs that are Kubernetes. What you care about are the workloads on top of it. So coming from a traditional background, it's understandable. You would go, well, if I back up the VMs that, you know, the pods run on, surely I've got a backup of my data.
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no. You do have a copy, but there's no guarantee that it's consistent. So you need something that can quiesce the applications, something that operates at a higher level to make sure that everything is consistent before backup is taken.
And there are hooks, and Carlisa can probably expand on it as well, but my understanding is there are hooks in Valero where you can actually do that quiescing of applications if they support it before you do the snapshot and the data copy, essentially.
Yeah. That is absolutely correct. So we have native hooks for that. And you can also add your own hooks if you need to do anything extra for both backup and restore.
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah, because that was one of the, again, I am coming from a VM-centric point of view when I look at this, but that makes sense because you've got an application. You're going to want to make sure that the backups that you're taking are good and are, you know, you're going to be able to quiesce and actually get good data when you do your backup so you're not losing data. So that makes perfect sense. So you already offer hooks and you have the ability for other companies to then create hooks as well for their specific storage?
Yeah, so we have what we call pre-hooks and post-hooks. If you need to do any processing that Valero doesn't offer in this particular to your workload, then you use a pre-hook or a post-hook if you want to do something before or after a backup or before or after a restore.
I see.
I think in Cormac's case, whenever he was testing with Cassandra, I'm not sure if he used the pre-hooks to do like a quiescence of the Cassandra database prior to doing the snap, but that would be the kind of idea there. You have something that interacts with whatever your app is, you tell it to quiesce and away you go.
Nice. So Miles, I know you've got Kubernetes in our lab. So are you using Valero to back it up?
There are no backups in our lab, Pete.
What's wrong? Man, if you lose my labs, I'm going to kill you.
It's a lab. It's
I'm
a family. This is how it goes.
Goodbye.
It is something that I need to set up. It's just, you know, it's on the list, trademark, you know, TM. But yeah, there's plenty of scope for us to spin up things. And I would imagine after VMworld, you'll see some more collateral from myself and Cormac around this kind of thing.
Yeah, Pete, going back to that kind of differences between what we're used to with traditional virtual machine backups versus what Valero does with Kubernetes,
yeah.
I think the other big thing is how snapshots behave. So if you think about how we back up virtual machines, we typically use snapshots as a short-lived entity for the virtual machine to keep running while we back up the quiesced VMDKs or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But there's a different approach when it comes to what Valero expects the snapshots to be, and that's essentially long-lived. So if Valero is running on AWS, Azure, GCP, whatever the cloud provider is, they will do that snapshot, but they will tend to keep that snapshot as a long-lived entity that can be referred to on the restores at any time. And so that's a big difference for us with vSphere or snapshot are not long-lived or they're short-lived entities. So it's something that we're working on right now to see how we can integrate better with Valero and that snapshotting paradigm that they have. So that's ongoing as we speak. However, that's not to say that we can't do backups of Kubernetes running on vSphere. What we do right now is we're using a component called RESTIC. So this is a third-party component. And essentially what we're doing is we're able to copy the contents of a persistent volume or our data to a destination. Rather than using long-lived snapshots, we're doing copies of the data.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I had read a little bit about RESTIC the other day. That was a new concept to me. But so Valero supports RESTIC, and that's how you're making full copies of the data for your snapshots for backups?
Yeah. So I'm Khaleesi can correct me if I'm wrong, but when we do have Alero backup, it looks like there's two different parts to it. So there's the metadata, so all the YAML file, all the manifest files that are describing your namespace or application or whatever it is you decide to backup, all of that is captured and saved off to an object store that you predefine. And then if you're dealing with a cloud provider, they're typically taking these long-term snapshots or long-lived snapshots. But for us, what we're doing is we're copying the data out of the persistent volumes. So we have our manifests or metadata, that's all backed up, the same as all the other cloud providers. But when it comes to the actual persistent volume data, what we're doing is we're copying that data to the same destination as we're putting our manifest files.
I see. Okay.
So yeah, slightly different approach for vSphere on-premises backups or Kubernetes on vSphere. But it is something, as I said, that we're looking to maybe do something additional around going forward.
Yeah. Are there any issues with the dependencies? You know, like in traditional, if you lose a VM, then obviously the snapshot needs, you know, once the VM's gone, the snapshots can't be like applied somewhere else. Is there any of that?
So we're not really using the snapshots on vSphere. So on AWS or Azure or GCP, these aren't really concerns. They're these things tend to be around for a long, long time. Yeah. It's no skin off their nose just to bring that straight back and apply it. But for us, we're not doing that approach at all. We're just copying the contents out of the PV.
Yeah.
So when it comes to a restore, we're just instantiating a new persistent volume and copying the data back into that.
That's good. Yeah. So and it's Khaleesi, definitely not like VM.
Did I get that right?
Yeah. No, that's right to me. Absolutely. So yeah. So Verstack is a plugin we support that can do exactly what Cormac just said. And it's handy when you are not in one of the service providers that we either support or have an external plugin for, or if you are in one of those but just want to do things differently.
I actually have a question or maybe a point or, you know, something that we could discuss around that. And Khaleesi said around these providers that they support. So she said there was AWS and GCP and Azure and all the rest of the big cloud providers. However, there's been a big drive in Kate recently to try and remove the sprawl of cloud providers in different environments and try and ratify them together into these centralized specs. So there's like the container storage interface spec, there's the container networking interface spec, there's all these different specifications. And the idea is that we can use these specs, like CSI is the one that I'll talk about because it's the one I know about, which is the container storage interface spec. And essentially, if you interact with that, it doesn't matter what your backend cloud provider is, those calls should just work. So for example, currently in the upstream working group for CSI, they're exploring an API like CSI Snapshot. So it doesn't matter what your backend provider is, if you call the CSI Snapshot API, it'll just take a snapshot for you and you get an expected result back. So going forward, I think Khaleesi can talk about this a little bit more, but there's probably some legs in building a plugin or an integration around CSI and letting CSI do a lot of the work that they would have to build custom otherwise.
So our team thinks this is a great initiative. We have a design document out right now. We would love if people would give feedback at any point in the process. So at this point, we have a design document. He has done some prototyping, and that's definitely the direction we are moving. We are initially going to continue supporting things just the way we are. And in parallel, we're going to start developing for supporting CSI. And the intention is to have all the CSI plugins out of tree in terms of Alero. So eventually, if everything works perfectly, we won't have any native plugins anymore. Everything is going to be out of Alero. Everything will be supported through the CSI interface. So yes, absolutely. That's a great direction to go.
And I guess the reason that you want to move the stuff out of core Alero is for the same reason that Kubernetes want to move the cloud providers out of core Kates, because some of them get security patches, some of them don't. They're tied to your release schedule, and if they're out of tree, then you don't have those problems, right?
Well, yes, but we don't have the same constraints as Kubernetes. So one big reason that we want to move things out of tree is that right now we've been supporting these three providers for a long time. And we don't want to add more providers because once it's in tree, it becomes our job. And so we have other providers that show up and say, hey, you know, I would love to be in tree too. And it's just it becomes a lot easier if everybody's at a tree instead of some are and some aren't. There's no really good reason for that. We recognize that. So it's going to be good to address that at the same time that we address some technical improvements, because I think it's going to be better all around to have this consistency and use the CSI, CRs having our own. So that's one reason. Another reason is that, again, like I said, once it's in tree, maintenance becomes our job. So once, for example, we move Azure out of tree, maybe the Azure developers will want to maintain it.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to make sure that we keep maintaining things the same as we have, whether they're in tree or not. But if they want to take over, it wouldn't be a bad thing either. And it would be a lot easier for people to maintain their own thing if it's not coupled to the Velero release schedule. It's always coupled to the Velero interface, but it doesn't have to be. As long as they don't break anything, they can make updates and changes.
And they're uniquely positioned within those companies to know if there are changes coming to like API specs, or there's newer technologies or better ways even to do what you're currently doing with the plugin. They can implement them themselves rather than you guys having to go and do the research and test it out and make sure it all works.
Yeah.
Boy, you're asking good questions, Miles.
Yeah, I agree with Chad. Carlisi, one more question for you. I know that this is an open source project, so I know it's owned by VMware now, but you guys still get contributors that are not VMware employees that are contributing to the actual code?
We do, yeah. We would like to have more. I have seen a bit of an uptick, but I think with any open source project, I don't know. It's not as much as I would like to.
Oh, okay.
But to answer your question, yes, we do. We do. A lot of people think this is an interesting project. They are using it, and we get a variety of backgrounds contributing. I would love to see people contributing, especially with our design discussions. So it doesn't have to be code.
Yeah.
People who are using Velero, giving us feedback. That would be... We get some. Given the number of people that I know use Velero and rave about Velero, there is a big gap between people who give us feedback and...
Yeah, I just think it's a pretty exciting opportunity to be able to do that. I mean, if you're passionate about, you know, if you are writing code and you're using certain software, the ability to just be able to join a group and be able to contribute and know what's going on and actually, I don't know, that seems pretty exciting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even that they need to do code. Like Carlisi said, there's that design document out there, which I'm sure we can link in the show notes for this, Pete. If people just have thoughts on what the design and architecture of the upcoming CSI solution looks like, and maybe it doesn't work the way they think it should work, feedback is valid contribution as well. It doesn't have to be code.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And if there's anything that people can foresee as a problem, of course, we're going to run into that later, but it'll be better if we knew ahead of time. So if you go to our PR list, there is a label called design. And every time we have something that's of more significance or complexity, we'll write out a design document. So that's a really quick way for people to know what's coming. Because when we're writing out a design document, that is definitely on the pipeline. And it's a great way to just read and think in terms of functionality and make comments. It's open for everybody.
I like it.
And if it's your favorite backup solution for Kubernetes, then you know you get to influence the roadmap of it. If you have good ideas and good discussions and ways that you think it should work, you know, you can literally shape the future of how it works.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. So you guys just came out with the very first, I know you were on lower than one numbers like .11 and all that stuff. But recently, Velero came out with their first 1.0 version of the software. What came out in 1.0?
Yes, that feels to me like 3 years ago. let's see. So we came out, one new feature was the install feature. So we added an install command to the CLI. And that was my favorite because before we had, every time we want to install Velero on the Velero server on the cluster, we had these YAML files, and it's just much easier this way. You can put it on the script, put everything on the script, just run the script, and it's super quick and easy. We did a lot of cleanup with our plugin framework. So we have, like I said, we have native support for the providers as far as interfacing with them and getting backups from your volumes in those cloud providers. But people also have written plugins for other cloud providers that are not those three. And people just use the framework to hook up their plugins into. And we cleaned up, we made the surface much, much smaller. So now when you import the plugin dependency, is much, much smaller. It's tiny. Before it was pretty big. And now the interface itself is much cleaner. It's easier to use. There were a bunch of improvements. I think we worked mostly on improving Velero rather than adding features.
Yeah, that's important for a 1.0, like a GA release. It's about stability and code quality, not so much, big ticket features.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what we were focusing on.
I like it. Yeah. Yeah, I will definitely leave links on the show notes of the podcast with the 1.0 release notes, with links to all the other stuff that we were referring to earlier. I think this is a pretty good introduction to Velero. I know, I was looking on VMworld's sessions, and there are over 100. It was 108 Kubernetes sessions this year at VMworld. And of those, I think five or six of them had Velero, whether in the title or part of the session was talking about PKS, using Velero and all that stuff, and not all just VMware, some other vendors and stuff like that. So this seems to be a growing trend. I think obviously this is a huge investment for VMware. It seems like we're going this direction anyway. I'm excited to see and learn more about this at VMworld. Carlicia, are you going to VMworld as well?
I am not.
Are you one of those?
Are you?
are you one of those? Only KubeCon hipsters that don't go to VMworld, as John would say.
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. I get one conference per day. Yeah,
it'll be great. Wow, you're busy.
One conference per a year, and I use it for GopherCon, and I try to submit CFPs to speak at KubeCon.
Yeah.
And because I'm a developer, so my job is not conference speaking. So
yeah, that makes sense.
I can't it'll be too much to be submitting to more places than that.
No, we need you working on 2.0.
If I had some, yes, exactly. If that were something useful for me to do, that would be helpful. I would love to go. I just didn't find myself in that position. But yeah, I haven't been. I will want to go sometime.
Right. And Pete, if you thought the selection process for VMworld was tough, the CFP for KubeCon is brutal.
I bet.
It is hard to get a talk accepted in there.
Oh, I can only imagine. But so I know, obviously, Miles, you've got several sessions. Cormac always has, some of the better sessions at VMworld. I'm looking forward to seeing. I'm guessing that you guys have some conversations around Kubernetes PKS this year.
Well, I'm not actually going to VMworld in the US this year. I know. You're devastated.
Kidding.
Too much going on at home. Kids starting university and all that kind of stuff. So I'm skipping US this year. But Miles has graciously invited me onto his cloud native storage session in Barcelona. So
nice.
I will be in Barcelona.
Yeah, we're going to kick ass and take names in Spain.
I like it. I'll be there, front row.
Something like that, yeah.
Cormac, do you only co-present with Irish people? Because last time I saw you with Powdy, now you're you.
Irish and Dutch.
Yeah, Irish and Dutch, exactly.
Draw the line there.
I love it. Well, Carlicia, thank you so much for joining this podcast, talking about Velero for the first time as a guest. You're now invited to come on anytime you like. And you can meet John, our co-host, who's currently being a new daddy. Cormac and Miles, thank you so much for co-hosting this week. I think we did a pretty good introduction to Velero, and I'm looking forward to listening back to it myself. This is going to be good. Anything else before we close out?
Well, Velero has a website. It's velero.io, and there you will find links to our 2 times a month community meetings where everybody can join, how to contact us on Slack, Twitter, etc.
Very nice. And that's velero.io?
Yes.
Got it. All right, cool. I will also put that on the show notes. Gentlemen, anything else for Carlicia before we leave?
Nothing for Carlicia, but if you want to get up to speed on it, the install docs on Velero.io are great. And if you're on VMware, Cormac's got a couple of blogs, so definitely check those out too.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Cormac, Miles, and Carlicia for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Boy, you're asking good questions, Miles.
Enough of this jibber jabber.